Chinas Union. See you soon.
Welcome everyone, including our replay viewers. Stand by as we get our streams going and we notify everyone that we are live. I'm going to let Delaine tell you all of the national weeks and days that are going on right now while I get my stream going.
Oh, yeah, a lot of days. We have World Diabetes Day, National Pickle Day, National Family Caregivers Day, National Gratitude Month, National Apprenticeship Week, which is, that's a very important week. Want to give a shout out to my man Leonard out in Texas, president of the Texas Building Trades Council, for putting an op-ed in the Houston Chronicle about helmets to hard hats, a great program that the building trades have. So congratulations to him for putting that op-ed in.
Excellent. Thank you, Delaine. I have to say, for National Pickle Day, I love pickles.
I like pickles on sandwiches, but not just.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah.
Garlic pickles, all kinds of pickles. Anyway, we're getting off topic here, but we hope that you'll share your comments about each topic and let us know what you really think, respectively, of course. We hope everyone had a good Veterans Day. It's still Military Family Month, so continue to thank our veterans for their service. Military families move around a lot, and that can be a sacrifice in itself. So thank you to all of the military families as well. We are almost ready to start our official show. Oh, wow, it's 3 o'clock. Activate Live starts now.
Activate your voice.
Fight for your rights.
Speak up.
Speak up.
We're union and we're proud.
Go Union.
Live from Maryland, this is Activate Live.
Welcome to Activate Live, our weekly show about the Machinist Union, organized labor, and workers in general. I'm Tanya Hutchins, coming to you live from our headquarters in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Here's Delaine Adams with the latest IAM news. Delaine?
Well, unfortunately, there's wildfires out in California, and our members from NEFI, IAM Local Federal Lodge 1995, are heavily involved in fighting these wildfires. This is happening in Paradise, California, so a big shout out to our members who are on the front line, making sure that everyone's safe. And also our prayers are with the group of newly organized IAM Local 946 members in Chico, California, who are among those living through the impact of the Camp Fire. And on the screen, you see the IAM Disaster Relief Fund. So text IAM Help to 55000. Again, that's text. Go ahead and text IAM Help to 55000. And please consider donating to this relief fund. They really need it out there in California. And again, we've heard as of 3 o'clock today, we have at least 48 people that have been declared dead. And we have many more who are missing. And so again, not only are members fighting on the front line, but our members who are affected with their houses that are now gone as a result of the fire, but also just their lives in turmoil as a result of this disaster.
I can't imagine fighting a fire and living in the area and worrying about your own home while you're fighting and saving other people's homes.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to do, and hopefully we'll be able to have a conversation pretty soon with them and to see what they've been going through and some of the sacrifices being made on the front line.
Okay, so hopefully we'll talk to some of our members.
Yes. Yeah, and just like I said, again, consider donating to that disaster relief fund. So, yeah. Well, we switch to good news. We have 140 new members of the IAM.
All right.
140 members at the VSE Corporation in Little Rock, Arkansas. They recently joined the IAM at Little Rock Air Force Base. They work as avionics technicians, aircraft maintenance, and specialists on the C-130J. So 140 members, welcome to your union. That's that big boy right there, that C-130. So, yeah.
It's a big plane.
It's a big plane. doing a lot of great work, and our members are involved in every aspect of it.
So we're so glad about that. Thanks for keeping us up to date.
Thank you, Tanya. Have a great show.
Thank you. And we'll keep an eye on iMail as well. We have a new one coming out Thursday.
Yes, we will.
Thank you, Delaine.
Take care.
Well, we love labor history, so here's looking back at a unionization effort 84 years ago. On this day in history, 1934, the American Railway Supervisors Association formed at Harmony Hall in Chicago. 29 supervisors working for the Chicago and Northwestern Railway organized after realizing the railroaders working under their supervision already had the benefits of unionization and were paid more for working fewer hours. It always pays to go union. The union merged with the Transportation Communications Union, or TCUIAM, in 1980. Well, the Machinists Union was founded as a railroad union in 1888, and TCU represents members on most freight and commuters across the United States, including Metro North, Long Island Railroad, New Jersey Transit, LA Transit, Metra in Chicago, and Amtrak. Many of what we call onboard members can be traced back historically to the sleeping car porters, which fought to be recognized as a union. Now, even though many years have passed, TCU is still fighting for our members. Joining us live to give us an update on what's going on at Amtrak is TCU Vice President Jack Dinsdale. Thank you so much for joining us, Jack.
Hi, Tanya. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Can you give us a little bit of background of how many unions there are at Amtrak? Because I understand there's also a council.
Yes, it's the Amtrak Service Workers Council. It's represented by three unions, TCUIAM, Unite Here, and the Transport Workers Union, TWU.
And how many members are we talking about when it comes to all of the unions in the council?
Well, I don't have a solid number for you. It's a few thousand, though.
Okay, that's great.
Maybe a little over two, yeah.
Now, give us some background on some of the changes that are happening, starting with, let's say, the meal plan changes.
Well, let me give you a little history to help you with that. Amtrak hired a new CEO. They brought in a guy from the airlines, Richard Anderson. His job is to evidently break the unions, as he did before, and that means replacing the people who perform the work on board the trains, specifically the dining car employees. That would be the chefs, the waiters, the stewards. And they put out a request for information asking other companies to bid on this work to replace the employees that we represent. Presently, they've put boxed meals on two trains between New York and Chicago, and have cut jobs there. So what they're doing is they're going from a hot cooked meal prepared by skilled, trained chefs from mostly the Culinary Institute to meals being prepared in a warehouse somewhere by, I'm guessing, minimum wage employees that are then put in cardboard boxes and shipped to the trains. So this is their goal, to get rid of the workers, get rid of fresh, hot, served meals on a train, and give people a box lunch.
Now that's disrupting people's lives. One day you have a job and then you find out it may not be there.
It's just the beginning, Tanya. They want to get rid of all of the long distance meal service. They want to do this whole prepackaging. The CEO, Richard Anderson, has brought in his henchmen from Delta Airlines, Peter Weilander, who used to work for Gate Gourmet, who I understand they're going to give them the contract, canceling the contract they have with Aramark, which is a conflict of interest, by the way. And they'll do all this stuff that they do on airlines. And people seem to forget, trains are a hotel and a restaurant. They travel, you know, parts of 3 days in some points from L.A. to Chicago, San Francisco, Chicago, Seattle, Chicago. So they're out there for a long time, and people have 6 or 7 meals on that train, and they want something fresh. They want something that's hot, cooked by a professional, not something put together in a warehouse that who knows what it looks like, full of salt, full of sugars, not ripe, the fruit. those sorts of things. So yes, it's going to cost, we've estimated 1,700 jobs to begin with.
I was just about to ask you about the customer experience, because that definitely changes the customer experience, and they will notice, you know, the differences in the food.
Yep.
Because these tickets do cost money. I mean, people think about that when they're buying tickets to take the train.
Well, years ago, what they did is they went to a program where a person traveling in a sleeping car, your meal's included. So they get on there expecting to have a good meal. That's part of the whole railroad experience. It has been for years. And so they'd have a steak prepared for them, or lasagna, or something like that. Now they can expect, you know, maybe a tuna sandwich that's been sitting in the warehouse for, could be weeks, who knows. These things have expiration dates on them.
Is it too soon for feedback, or is the public already giving feedback?
We're getting a little feedback. Unfortunately, a lot of the feedback comes through the toll-free number, the call centers. And that feedback goes nowhere. It squelches right there. And I've actually talked to those people. I represent them as well. And they told me they take the complaints. They've got canned answers there to give to these people. And that's it. For the longest time, when they did the first two trains, they were giving out vouchers to the employees that were complaining. It was so bad, they put on, and in a meeting with them, they told me, oh, we put hot meals back on. What they did is they put something on they could throw in the microwave, and they're calling that a hot meal now.
What does it say that the person running Amtrak has no railroad experience?
Well, it says a lot. They believe that they can make this an airline on the tracks, it's just not going to work. What everybody seems to forget in this picture is the flyover states. Everybody thinks you go coast to coast and there's nothing in between. That's why they started closing all the stations. The people out in the middle part of the country have no customer service. They'll spin the web. Here's the story they tell. 90% of the people buy their tickets online. That's not true. It's just what they have to tell us to sell what they're doing. That is closing stations. We just received notice today that they're going to close a union call center in Riverside. 500 employees, give or take a few. 500 employees are going to be out of a job so that they can outsource the work, which they've already begun. They have a non-union shop in Florida they've already opened. So it's total union busting, just like these two guys that came from Delta Airlines did over there with Northwest Airlines. They broke that union, and now what they're trying to do is get rid of the union workers at Amtrak.
How can we help our non-union workers out there understand the difference between a trained, experienced union worker on the, you know, working for Amtrak versus these outsourced employees?
Real quick, just a few things. Trained in CPR, trained in first aid, trained in emergency evacuation. Years ago, I read a passenger letter where she wrote in where a train had derailed. They were in the middle of Kansas. The train was on its side. She was calling her family to let them know that she was okay, that she was safe. And she said she was making that phone call on an employee's cell phone. So that's how far the employees will reach out to help passengers. Give them her own personal cell phone to let her contact her family so that they didn't have to worry. These are jobs where it takes people away from their home 6 days at a time on the West Coast because they go to Chicago. They work holidays, they work Christmas, and they're committed. These are not just jobs, they're careers. These people work out there 30 or 40 years. These trains are their offices, these passengers are their friends, and that's what people need to understand. The direction this new guy is headed is the same thing that caused the creation of Amtrak when they started tearing the freight railroads started tearing apart their passenger service. They just didn't want people on. So Amtrak was created. Now we're headed back in that same direction where they're making the service so bad people won't ride it. And it's all for the CEO who's here working like it's a hobby. He was retired. He's a millionaire. He doesn't need this job. He told me to my face in Washington, D.C., I'm not getting anything. I'm not being paid. Now, first of all, you know it's incentive laden. He's going to get a bunch of money. He's not working here for free. Do you want me to think that it's a hobby? These people are here to make a name for themselves on the backs of the union working employees.
Jack, you've had rallies, and I don't know if you have any more upcoming rallies, but we actually have your Facebook page, and there are some pictures and some videos on there of the rallies that you've had in the past. How can we, as the general public and as fellow union members, help in this effort to fight for the Amtrak workers?
Write to your congressman, write to your senator, let them know you want a national railroad system, and you want it with employees that are skilled and trained, not non-union, not someone who's coming in here for a summer job, but skilled employees who are there that can help them in the time of need.
Anything else you'd like to mention, Jack?
Not that I probably could say here.
Okay. Well, we understand. We are pulling for you, and we are all willing to fight. We have a long history of fighting with TCU IAM for those Amtrak jobs, so we're going to do everything we can. And thank you for your effort in keeping up the fight, Jack.
All right. Thank you, Tanya.
That was Jack Dinsdale, TCU IAM Vice President. For more information, you can visit TCU's pages. You can follow all of TCU's social media pages, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest updates. And you too can join the conversation. What do you think? Comment now to activate your voice about the effort to save jobs and careers at Amtrak, both on board and elsewhere. Show your support for the workers who move North America, whether it's in the Northeast Corridor or across the country. Our union was built as a railroad union and will fight every day to protect railroad jobs. We have a comment already from, Eloy Rodriguez, saying hello from Fort Worth, Texas, District 776. Thank you for your support. Brian Steinmax, the destruction out in California is incredible. Please donate to help our IAM brothers and sisters out there. He was mentioning all of those fires out there that Delaine Adams had mentioned earlier. So we appreciate everyone who is commenting, liking, and sharing on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, and thanking our Instagram viewers as well. They are still there. I'm waving to them on our camera as we get ready for our next interview. Well, speaking of jobs, how we perform our jobs as union members is coming under fire, but is it fair? There's a lot of misinformation out there when it comes to what union members do, when, and how we do it. And we'd like to set the record straight. So IAM Government Employees Director Jim Price joins us now with details right here in our studio. Thanks for being here, Jim.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, thank you.
And before we get started, if I can, the folks out in California, the fires out there are devastating, and I'm sure Delaine talked about our members from NIFI IAM Federal District 1 that are out there on the front line. And big shout out to them for the sacrifices they make. I understand that maybe a couple of our members may have lost their homes while they were out supporting and trying to save those homes of others while they were doing their jobs.
So that is something else about first responders, because they are fighting for others to save lives, and they're losing their own property.
It's amazing.
Well, we
real
hope,
heroes.
Yes, they are. Those are our real heroes, so we appreciate them very much. First off, I'm just going to ask you straight up to explain what official time is so that all of the people watching who are not familiar with the term know what we're talking about when we talk about official time.
In the private sector, we have shop stewards that represent folks as required, as needed. If you have an issue, you go out and you talk to your supervisor and ask, you know, for permission to go over and actually work on an issue, whether it be a termination, whether it be a safety matter, things of that nature. In the government sector, you have what's called official time, which basically could be anywhere between 20 hours a week and could be 100 hours a week. You could be full time. What's going on right now is that the government is passing a lot of misinformation out about official time.
And that's what I was going to ask you. It's like a PR stunt.
And specifically in the VA. Okay, I just got off the phone, a conference call here just before I came in, with our own NIFI IAM Federal District 1, where their legal gurus are basically gotten together, and they're in the midst of a situation where, as of tomorrow, our members our professional members will not be allowed to service or to represent our members in the VA. Official time, or the representation that you do during official time, it is not taxpayer-funded union time.
No, it's representational, correct?
Right. It has to do with grievances. It has to do with arbitrations. It could be partnership, safety, a number of things. And the problem is that this is typical of this administration to take and try to put a spin on something that basically is not necessarily what it really is.
Can we go through these one at a time?
Okay.
Like grievances, for example. You have to take the time to
investigate. You got to take the time to basically talk with the grievant. You got to take the time to basically go out and talk to other folks who may have been a part of that, other members. When you start talking about arbitrations, you may have to sit down with the individual that's going through the arbitration and try to set up your brief. You may have to talk about what you're going to present during the arbitration, and then your brief. I'm sorry, I got it backwards. And then in the federal sector, safety is a big thing. I don't think people actually understand. As I said, safety is a big thing, specifically with the fires out west. We have people that work at Aberdeen Proving Grounds that work with some of the nastiest chemicals that there is in this world. We have folks that work on aircraft. We have folks that basically work with heavy machines. Safety is a big issue, and that's one of the bigger things that basically these folks do with their official time. Now, our government, this administration, would like to make you and me believe that they're handling union business. They're holding union meetings. They're basically they're in their union mode. Where basically they're not. They're doing what is prescribed by law to basically represent our members.
What does misinformation do when it comes to how harmful it is in terms of the importance of making sure that we set the record straight?
Funny you should mention this, because as I said, I just got off of a conference call with the folks at NIFI IM Federal District 1 just a few minutes ago. The directive that was put out last Thursday, which is typical of this administration, they'll put something out on a holiday or they'll do something a week before, and this is specifically geared to the VA. It's going to go into effect tomorrow, as I said. This is a clear violation of what the judge's ruling was on the previous three EOs that were dropped back in May 25th of this year, where we went to court. We actually got injunctive relief or relief from these EOs. They were ruled illegal.
That's what the judge said.
The judge said it was illegal. And what happened was is now the VA, they've taken this on, and what they're going to try to do is impose what the administration couldn't achieve with the changes in, with the executive orders. So it's a tricky situation from what I understood from the phone call. And we can't necessarily go back to the judge looking for injunctive relief, because there's some little nuances that are here. It's one agency instead of the whole government sector. So we're having to go back and basically look at a lot of different things and file a separate lawsuit possibly, which is costing us money, which is costing us time. Our representatives can't go out and represent the folks in the field. In some cases, from what I understand on that phone call, there's a couple of places where we only have nurses. And inside of these VA hospitals, I'll let you know, there are nurses, there are psychiatrists, there's PAs, there's pharmacists, and we represent those folks. Those people, those professionals are being taken out of their official time mode. They cannot use it as of tomorrow.
So what does that do to the union members that they're servicing?
That leaves them out in the cold. I mean, it leaves them, open for anything that management might want to do.
Do you have any advice for those workers who are being left out in the cold this misinformation from the administration?
I'm going to let all of our members know out there in the federal sector that basically NIFI Federal District 1, NIFI IM Federal District 1, and the IM itself, because we have several units that we have that are federal units. We're doing everything in our power to make sure that we fight this off. We're doing legally, legislatively, and we're going to be on the ground, because we have to support these people out there. This is really over the top. Of course, this is the administration that we have.
Do you want? Go ahead.
Also, we're not done with the first lawsuit yet. So there are some things that have to happen with that. So what I'd say to any of the members is obey what you're told and then grieve.
And then we need to make arrangements to cover the official time. Like I said, I'm reading from this because I just got off the phone. Like I said, some of our locations are all nurses, and they're going to be removed from the official time rolls. So business agents are going to have to pick up the slack on that, and staff at NFEI and Federal District 1. And then there's a briefing schedule that's coming down on the original lawsuit. Again, this is just inside of the VA at this point in time. But again, this can impact all federal workers. And then last but not least, anything they do to the federal workers today is coming to the private sector, folks. This is not just a federal fight. This is a union fight. So we got to stand up.
We do. We have to make our voices heard. We have to help people understand what unions are, what we do.
Yes, and we got to talk to our politicians. And we've got some friendlies now. This election kind of helped us a little bit in the House. And I'd like to say this, too. I happened to hear Steve Linkhart, who's the legislative person for NFEI and Federal District 1, and he's already been up on the Hill talking to folks about, you know, some of the things that are going on here with the VA, and he's getting some good comments from a lot of the representatives that basically he spoke with so far. I know that Monica Silbus is involved. She was on the call today. Again, this is not just a NFEI Federal District 1, NFEI and Federal District 1 fight. This is an IAM fight, and we're at it.
And we've just passed Veterans Day. We are still in the mode of thanking our veterans for their service, and we're trying to fight to make sure that we can still service them.
And then, correctly. You know, on top of that, what you're doing is you're killing veterans that work in the VA.
Yes.
That's the problem. There's no rhyme or reason, and it's just ridiculous what basically has happened. Most of the people that work in the VA are actually veterans themselves.
Well, we want to hear from you veterans out there. If you're a veteran and you work in a federal job, let us know. Comment and let us know. Give us a shout out because we want to show the magnitude of how many federal workers out there who are actually veterans.
Yeah.
You know?
I'd be willing to bet it's at least 30% or better. It's just terrible, though, to me that something that's probably geared to help the VA, the veterans themselves, is being decimated. And you've also got some information that's coming out on veterans, how they're not getting their payments. That's hot news, too. They're not getting their payments for school or any of the other things, the other benefits they were promised when they...
After all they've done for our country.
Yeah.
You know, I think any veteran, no matter what country you're in, whether you're in the U.S. or Canada, if you've sacrificed for your country, when you come home, you should be taken care of.
Absolutely. Speaking of veterans, shout out to my dad, James E. Price Sr. He was a Korean War veteran, so we had a conversation the other day about his experience.
You should have brought us a picture of him.
I got one on my desk. Maybe next time I come, I'll bring it.
Shout out to Daddy Price.
You bet.
Okay. Thank you so much for stopping by and keeping us up to date on what's going on.
Not a problem.
So let us know what you think about official time and how to set the record straight by commenting on this video. We'd like to hear from you watching at home, even during the replay, whether you're watching on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. While we have this graphic up, I'm going to say goodbye to all of our Instagram viewers because they won't be able to hear our next interview, which is a good one, but they'll have to jump on over to either Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. Well, Guide Dog, oh wait, there's a comment. Kelly Easy Street says, thanks for carrying the fight, Jim. Jim is still standing right here, and he saw that comment, so he appreciates that. Sean McGrath says, thank you for your support, Jack. Jack Dinsdale, TCU Vice President, he's very passionate about his work as well. Kelly says, thanks for keeping us TCU folks in the loop, too. So thank you all for commenting. We appreciate it. And even if you end up watching the replay at your convenience, you can still make a comment there. We appreciate it, and we'll still try to get back to you. Well, Guide Dogs of America's Wimpasinger Weekend starts tomorrow, and preparations are already underway. Let's go live to Las Vegas, Nevada, where Zach Gitlin is taking a break from his duties to speak with us. Since Zach Gitlin joins us live, and Zach, what is going on today? Because we're really a day before the big day and all the festivities start.
Well, it's really not just today. It's been all week, last week, the week before, months leading up to this. But today, We're just getting everything set in place, final preparations. For those of you that don't know what the charity banquet is, it's a culmination of our whole year with the IAM of fundraising. As you know, all of our union brothers and sisters fundraise to make GDA possible year in and year out. And what this weekend is all about is us saying thank you, celebrating all the progress that we've been able to make together. So we have coming up this week, we have a skeet shoot. That's exciting. It's a pretty cool event. It's unlike any other skeet shooting that I've ever seen. It's like a golf course, but for skeet shooters. So each station that you go to is a different type of launch angle for the clay, for the birds. And it's scored at the end, and there's winners, and there's a raffle, of course. We also have our yearly Hogs for Dogs, so it's a bike run. They told me yesterday that they're going to ride 250 miles tomorrow, so they're going out to some ghost towns in Arizona where it's inhabited by donkeys and mules and just a pretty neat ride. I wish I was able to go. And then Friday we have our golf tournament, probably one of our most heavily attended golf tournaments that we've had in years. I think we're up to like 260, 270 golfers. A lot of fun stuff planned. We've got our potato gun back out there. So for the people that aren't as good with the clubs and irons and wedges and stuff like that, we've got an air compressor gun to make the shot a little easier for you. So we're really excited about everything that's going on and about this weekend.
Zach, remind us how much it costs to actually raise and train the dogs from the time they're puppies all the way up to training the guides, because I think it's more than people think.
Yeah, so the cost of each guide dog from birth, we breed our dogs on campus till they graduate from our school, and it really doesn't even stop there because we cover costs even when they leave. You know, if a local graduate wants to bring the dog back in for a vet checkup, we cover that. It's about $50,000 per dog. So I usually compare it to like a Cadillac that's sitting in the driveway. But what they do is some amazing work, and that $50,000 really goes a long way when you consider the confidence, independence, and mobility that people receive back.
So this is so important. I mean, Guide Dogs of America is changing people's lives.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you see people that come to our school, and I usually use any instance of where I am to explain exactly what a guide dog does. So, like, right now I'm in Las Vegas. And if you're blind and you're not using a guide dog, you're either depending on a sighted guide, which is another human, or you're using the white cane. Now, imagine trying to navigate through a casino with all the different noises that, I mean, it's hard. I'm sighted, and I get lost in Paris and Bally's on my own, so I can't imagine not having any vision. So you're constantly trying to find tactile information to tell you where you are. So, okay, I just bumped into a slot machine, or okay, here's the wall. All right, there's the entrance for the elevator. What a guide dog does is it takes all that guesswork out for you. So it's not going to run you into any of the slot machines. It's not going to run you into a pole. It's not going to cut you close on a doorway. It's going to walk you right through the middle. Another impressive thing that they're able to do is that they memorize routes. So one of our graduates was here for a conference a couple months ago, and she showed her guide where the bathroom was when she got here. And throughout the whole weekend, she was able to have her guide dog navigate her back to that same bathroom whenever she needed to go. The dog also, as long as the graduate knew what floor to get off on in the elevator, the dog also knew where her room was. So things that would take so much longer if you didn't have, you know, a guide dog are just so cut so short with one.
Now, Zach, this week during the charity banquet, you have some honorees for the Gift of Sight Award. Tell us a little bit about who's being recognized this year.
So the Gift of Sight is our annual award for some of our top fundraisers and people that really take that extra step and go all out for the cause. So the honorees this year the first ones are General Secretary Treasurer Doris Cervantes. She's been working with us for probably over 20, 30 years now. is always a top fundraiser. The cause, you can always tell, is near and dear to her heart. She's at every event that she can possibly make it to. The second one is National Group Protection. They do in plans for all the union members, and they've also been with us for over 20 to 30 years. Like Dora, they're at every event. I mean, you go to any golf tournament, bike run, they're there, they're donating, they're running events of their own. And the last one's a really cool one. The last one's one that I'm most excited about. I mean, they're all great, but this one's really unique for this year. It's the Blevins, so Tony and Teresa Blevins. Tony is the aerospace coordinator for the IMAW, and his wife, Teresa, is a graduate from Guide Dogs of America. I'm sure you might have seen them out at a Guide Dogs of America event or a union event throughout the country. They're super active. Their story is actually pretty unique. They met working on a union contract together, so they have a lot of union history in their relationship. And Teresa's amazing. Teresa is one of our most active graduates. She travels all over the country with her guide dog, Asia. She's kind of a shining example of what we aim for when we pair a dog, we match a dog with a human.
She truly is wonderful, and if you ever heard her sing at some of our events, it is a treat to hear her sing as well. But you're right, I can't think of another couple that has worked so much to help fundraise for Guide Dogs of America and show how useful the dogs are in changing lives. Okay, before we go, we have to show some puppies. So tell us a little bit about explore.org.
So I've been working with this group called explore.org. They are a nonprofit themselves funded by the Annenberg Foundation. And what they do is they run live webcams on their website to expose the world to all these different animals that you may never get to see in real life. I mean, the guy that came and installed our live camera was recently in Alaska with the grizzly bears. He was going down to Florida to install a camera with fruit bats. You can see at the top of that screen, there's all different categories, but the most important one is ours. We're the Guide Dogs of America Nursery Cam, and we have a litter of German Shepherd puppies in there right now. They're about a month old, and we just got them going on real kibble, so they have a ton of energy, are up and running around. The mom, Britta, is a first-time mom, and there's, I believe, 7 puppies, I think 4 males, 3 females, and I just go on there and check it out. It's, you know, you get kind of addicted to it. You pick out a puppy that you like to watch. It's a really good time.
Excellent. I can never, that never gets old, watching the dogs.
Yeah, no.
Well, thank
just
you.
Just completes that.
Thank you so much, Zach Gitlin, for joining us from Guide Dogs of America. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you. Thank you guys very much.
Well, Guide Dogs of America's activities run through Saturday night with the charity banquet. So keep an eye on GDA's Facebook page for the latest, or you can pull up this adorable puppy cam to see all of the puppies training to change lives and careers of people who are blind or visually impaired. I can't get enough of that. That's wonderful. And go to guidedogsofamerica.org if you'd like more information on Guide Dogs of America. And if you're in Vegas this week, you're lucky. Pretty good. We'll have updates from there as well. Well, grab your pens and pencils. We have some upcoming dates for you because we always like to end our show letting you know about any deadlines. So coming up, December 2018, we have the Advanced Communicators. The registration deadline is coming up for Train the Trainer, and also the deadline for News Writing for Communicators class is November 23rd, so get your information in as soon as possible. That class takes place January 27th to February 1st. That's the News Writing for Communicators. The 2019 calendar is now posted online as well. For more information, you can go to wimpasinger.iamaw.org. That's wimpasinger.iamaw.org. We have a Machinist State Council meeting coming up in Washington State. It'll be in Union. That's the fourth quarter meeting from November 28th to December 1st. And as we just told you, Guide Dogs of America's Women's Wimpy Singers Weekend takes place in November. Looking ahead to April, April 2nd to the 6th, we have the IAM Women's Conference coming up with a theme, Women Rising, Unite the Fight. That will be at Bally's Hotel in Las Vegas. The call letters are already out. So look for the call letters. There's information in iMail, which came out yesterday. So save the date here. I think it's a registration date on April 2nd. And then there will be on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th, there will be workshops. A lot of it is still in the works, but we're trying to get the word out to as many people as possible. I'm sure the majority of people there will be women, but men are welcome from what I understand. So check your iMail and your email inbox. That comes out twice a year. We have Jim Price, who just left here. He was our second guest, and he commented, Tanya, a lawsuit is being filed today in regards to the changes in official time at the VA Veterans Affairs. So as we speak, IAM and NEFI are still fighting the fight to protect official time, because that's how we service our members. So we're trying to set the record straight, trying to give you the information that you need as a union member, and hopefully educating the non-union members out there as well. That is it for this episode of Activate Live. Join us next Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern or noon Pacific when we highlight National Native American Heritage Month. Remember, you can watch us at your convenience on this same social media platform. We are the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers.